I'm next on the program, a guy who is the mastermind behind what I think is the best place to go out there in the wild world of Twitter. It's Super 70 Sports, and the genius behind it joins us, Ricky Cobb. Welcome in. Good to have you with us.
Rich Kimball, the main man. I'm so happy to be here.
Well, we're so happy to have you on. I've been a big, big fan of what you do for a long, long time. And then I find out that you know, we've got more in common than just our love of the greatest decade ever. You teach sociology. Now, you do it at the college level. I do it with high school students.
I do. I thought you were going to say that you were good looking.
Well, there's that, but that's a given, right?
Yeah, of course. I am a sociology professor by day, and so this has been a rather unexpected midlife adventure for me to become the Super 70s guy as well.
Well, what was the inspiration in getting this all started?
You know, I read a book called Big Hair and Plastic Grass.
Oh, our man Dan Epstein.
Yeah, okay. You're hip to Dan. So, great guy, and I've become friends with Dan over the past several years, but when that book came out, I didn't know Dan, and that was really my introduction to funky Dan Epstein. And Dan was promoting his books on Facebook, and he was posting old baseball cards from the 70s and things like that. And I found myself looking forward every day to what Dan was posting. You know, he would throw up these baseball cards of Willie Stargell or Gary Maddox, or, you know, you just never knew who was going to be next.
Or usually Oscar Gamble anytime he could justify it.
Yeah, Oscar Gamble anytime you can justify it. And the same certainly holds true for tweets. But I was a fan of Dan's stuff, and I was on Christmas break one winter, and I guess looking for something to amuse myself with, during the downtime. And I thought, well, gosh, maybe I could kind of take what Dan does and see if the same concept would work if I applied it to more than just baseball and other sports. And as time has gone on, I've sort of, ended up applying it to more than the 70s and more than sports. There's a lot of pop culture and other things as it's evolved. But I've got to give Dan Epstein all the credit for planting that seed in my mind.
Well, that's great. Yeah, we love Dan. Dan has been on a bunch with us. Matter of fact, he and Ron Bloomberg were on talking about their new book just a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah. I got a copy of that. I haven't had a chance to dig into it yet. But, Dan bats 1,000, and Bloomberg certainly has a very interesting story to tell about himself and Thurman Munson. So I'm definitely looking forward to putting that high on my summer reading list.
Well, the Twitter feed is just, it's insane. You've got almost 500,000 followers. What's the secret of your success? What's the magic that's got so many people looking forward to seeing what you do?
Well, Rich, I can certainly tell you when I started the account, I never could have imagined in my wildest dreams that it would become so popular or that I would be approaching 5,000 followers, much less a 500,000. I think that I sort of unwittingly tapped into, almost this sort of cultural magic that for, a lot of us of a certain age, a lot of the material that I post is very evocative. You know, it's almost like a good song, how it takes you back to a particular place or time in your life. And I found that these tweets and some of the subjects that I address seem to kind of do the same thing for people. So, I tell folks sometimes that I feel like this Twitter feed is almost like we're having an informal class reunion generationally every day. And I really didn't realize how powerful that was going to be until the account passed 2,000 and 3,000 and 5,000 and 10. And I was amazed, even to be at that level of followers. And it happened fairly quickly. I think I got to about 20,000 within the first year, which was astonishing. And if you told me then that I'd be approaching the number that I have today, I would have you know, I would have said get out of here and shoved you like a Elaine Bennett. but here we are, you know, and it's I have to tell you, it's the joy of my life. I don't think there's anything I've ever done in my life that has been more delightful, entirely unexpected, and has led me to make so many friends and acquaintances that you know, I value just so much.
We're talking with Ricky Cobb from Super 70s Sports, and yeah, you know, you hit the nail on the head. And I'm older than you, but you know, I graduated in the mid 70s, and it really is. It's like a class reunion every day, but with the guys you wanted to hang out with, not some of those other people. And it's laugh out loud funny. I'm looking at one of the posts from today that features Olivia Newton-John, and I'll share this one. The tweet is, contrary to what Greece led me to believe, I eventually learned there weren't going to be any 30-year-old hot Australian women in my high school. I mean, that's just brilliant. I love that.
Profoundly disappointing, as you can imagine.
And then
I had such high aspirations when I saw Greece.
Well, it's so laugh out loud funny, and then other times just man, some of the great memories when you posted the picture of, as a Red Sox guy here, of Yaz and Ted Williams together, and some of your tributes to the great athletes, and just the personalities that made, for my money, the 70s the most interesting decade.
Yeah, I am asked frequently, you know, why the 70s? And I guess the simplest answer is that was, you know, when I was born. I was born in 71. I'm actually a little young to be the 70s guy. It probably would have made more sense if I were the 80s guy, I suppose. But I've always had this fascination with just the aesthetics of the 70s. And not just the aesthetics, but a lot of the cultural aspects of it too. You know, we've certainly made progress in society in a lot of ways since the 1970s, but there's something so charming about it. You know, the sort of lack of self-awareness, I suppose, in some respects, that we had culturally compared to today, because there's so many things. You know, it's not that long ago. It might seem that way to our kids, but it's really not that long ago, and to think that, you know, seatbelt, not really. The car has them, but they mostly exist to burn your legs in July, you know, when you climb in and didn't put them on if you were like me. The playground equipment that we had, you know, some of these slides that were tall and precarious, and there were no guardrails, and You look at the playgrounds that we had as kids, and it's like, my goodness, did any adult turn to another adult and say, hey, you know, do you think this is really a good idea? apparently not. You know, they won't let you leave the hospital with your newborn, you know, until they see that, rightly so, until they see that the child is fastened safely and properly. And you know, I remember my mom talks about taking me to the grocery store when I was 2 years old. And my mom, who, you know, by conventional 70s standards was pretty much an overprotective parent, would allow me to stand in the passenger seat, shotgun, as we're on our way to the grocery store, you know, and my seatbelt was her arm. If she had to stop short, you know, she had to reach over and catch me. And you know, that was just the world that we lived in. Secondhand smoke everywhere, and you know, you look back on it today, and it's pretty crazy some of the attitudes that were so prevalent then. But it was our normal at the time.
You posted a picture yesterday of a classic 70s bicycle, and the tweet was, "I can't tell you precisely what will happen on this bike, but I do know it will involve a child, a quest for greatness, and a trip to the emergency room." And man, oh man, did I live that. Why? Because I was old enough to watch Evel Knievel in the 70s, but obviously not smart enough to account for aerodynamics, because a buddy and I built a ramp. And I had my little chopper bike, and man, I just remember the moment of going airborne on the end of that ramp and feeling like I was flying. And then somewhere along the way, time stood still as I realized that my trajectory was much greater than my seventh grade math skills allowed for. And me and the bike were never the same after that. So that brought back some memories, not all of them pleasant.
Definitely some physics lessons were learned the hard way in those days. Yeah, Evel Knievel was an incredible character, but you know, there would have been a heck of a class action lawsuit against him, I think, if we counted up the emergency room trips due to severely misguided Evel Knievel inspiration. That there's no telling. The number may be, the number of broken bones and scrapes and cuts and injuries is probably infinite, but we had a heck of a time doing it anyway.
Now, I read the wonderful piece the Chicago Trib did on you a while back, and at the time, I believe the most popular in terms of likes and retweets and shares and all of that, the most popular post you had was the classic with Howard Cosell, O.J. Simpson, and the athlete formerly known as Bruce Jenner. Is that still the most popular one you've had?
That is the most popular one that I've had. Yeah, I guess we all work in the shadow of what we've previously done, and that one's shadow still looms pretty large. So until I'm able to get something out there that is more widely distributed than that, I suppose that's the standard that I work against. But that's the one that everybody talks about, and I told someone not that long ago that it's my Hey Jude. I guess, you know, I'll be playing that one during the encore until I'm 70, probably. But it's one of my favorites anyway. So you know, I don't mind, and of course, you know, it's just great. Great to be acknowledged, right? You know, if you get something out there and people enjoy it and they share it and it gets memed and all of those good things, you know, that's a great feeling, because you know, you as a comedian and as someone who's trying to entertain people every day, you know, certainly that's the goal, is hit the mark and give people something that they think is worth telling their friends about. So for that reason, I suppose that's my favorite tweet.
Now, not everybody appreciates the humor. Is there one tweet in particular that has upset more people than others?
Oh, geez. I'm trying to think. You know, I don't get in trouble with people probably as often as you might think. People complain about the cursing, which, you know, I work a little blue sometimes, language-wise. I try not to be vulgar, but I pepper the captions with words that may not be safe for work. I'm trying to think what would have been, you know, the Joe Paterno loyalist came at me pretty hard a few years ago, and I think I lost a bunch of followers because I had made a tweet about Joe Paterno that was not casting Joe in a positive light. You know, that's where you'll get people sometimes, is if you go after, you know, someone's hero, you're more likely to tick somebody off, I think, than probably anything else. I've never had the subject of a tweet complain to me. You know, that I suppose in itself is maybe a little surprising, but I've never had somebody, you know, message me or contact me and say, "Hey, I didn't like that tweet that you made about me." But if you poke fun at someone that someone else has up on a pedestal, you know, sometimes they don't like it so much.
Now, you also do a terrific podcast, and I'm envious, because we strive to get the unusual and occasionally the forgotten guest from that period of time on the show, and I'm immensely impressed that you got both Lowe's, but also, I don't know, I'm torn between extreme jealousy that you had Dave Parker on your show and Leroy Jordan.
Yeah, well, thank you. Yeah, Leroy Jordan appreciation, and he's a prince of a guy. Dave Parker was amazing. Yeah, it's pretty heady stuff You know, when you find yourself talking to Rob Lowe or Dale Earnhardt Jr., I mean, for goodness sake, I had Barry Williams on, you know, to be talking to Greg Brady and getting to pick his brain about the Brady Bunch. That's about as surreal as it gets. So, yeah, there's definitely a part of me, even though I'm getting used to it a little bit now, there's still a part of me that kind of shakes my head and marvels at the fact that, you know, some of these folks are able to carve out 30 minutes or an hour to talk to little old me. You know, it's pretty wild.
For us, that surreal moment was when Marion Ross, Mrs. C, was dropping F-bombs in the middle of an interview.
Oh, my God. That is awesome. Is that archived somewhere?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. That's up on the website. Although, Carrie, is it the air version, the clean version, or the unexpurgated?
If you get it off our podcast, it is unfiltered. If it's off the website, which is we archive everything on the website as well. The straight archive on the website is the aired clean version.
I want Marion Ross uncensored.
Oh, yeah.
That's the real deal. I want the straight F-bomb dropping Mrs. C. That's incredible.
That is the only way to have her. Now, you posted recently a picture of what I always say was the item, the greatest Christmas gift I ever got that led to the biggest disappointment. And my first understanding as a youngster that what we saw on TV was not real. And that was, of course, the electric football game.
I knew exactly where you were going. There's never been a more disproportionate ratio of looks like fun to actually fun than electric football. I mean, if you set the men out on the board and you just look at it, it looks like you are about ready to have the time of your life.
Oh yeah.
And you should stop there, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
Don't point it into the wall. Keep it. If you have a man cave and you have room, it's a beautiful decoration. I know that there are people out there who feel like they have gained some mastery over electric football. I actually know a guy who plays in competitive electric football leagues. And these guys, you know, they basically take equipment and you know, work the underpinnings of the little men.
Oh yeah, my former co-host built an electric football set, built a stadium to match our Maine Black Bears home stadium, and then created the all-time greatest Colonial Athletic Association teams by weighting the bottoms of players to give them additional speed. And that's, for me, an impressive level of obsession when you create a football championship subdivision electric football game.
That's a man that needs a girlfriend.
I think his wife said that too, yeah.
Okay.
I was so bad, Ricky, I had, after my experience with the electric football game, I still convinced my mom to buy me the electric baseball game, which was even worse.
We just didn't learn, did we?
No.
You know, the old Sears wish book back in those days, I still can flip through, you know, a 40-year-old Sears wish book, and, you know, I want everything, you know, that's in there, because it's the dream. Electric football just represents the dream of a better tomorrow. I'll tell you this, I never completed a pass.
Oh no, it was impossible to complete a pass. Although
never.
If you took the size of the field into consideration and extrapolated, your straight on St. Louis Cardinals Jim Bakken place kicker could boot that ball approximately 13 miles.
Yeah, I you know, which is, you know, really a lot better than Jim Bakken ever did. You know, Jim Bakken played in the NFL for 17 years, and he had one 50-yard field goal in his career. Of course, he was wearing a shoe that was made of metal and probably weighed 17 pounds. So we got to grade these things on the curve. But
well, yeah, and did it while sporting a buzz cut and smoking a Pall Mall.
That's right, at halftime. on the sideline. You know, the main nutrition that these guys had in those days was, you know, alcohol and nicotine and meat. That was basically, that was how they subsisted, a few potatoes.
And that's why we celebrate.
That's right. No, I'll tell you, electric football definitely, hands down, the all-time fun to look at, chaos to play game. You know, I somehow, of every time before I plugged it in, that this was going to be the day that it somehow made sense.
Oh, exactly.
But
it just
never happened.
I just did it to make the cat run away. That was the big thing at the time. Well, Ricky, it is so great to talk with you. I could talk with you all day long. I appreciate you so much for being on with us. Want to mention, too, you've got a little sale going on in the Super 70 Sports store today as well. $5 off everything.
Yes, sir. We do. Yeah, we're kind of like Kohl. You know, we run the special pretty consistently. For the followers of the Twitter account and Super70SportsStore.com. If you've never been there, I would encourage your audience to give it a look. I always tell people, you know, you might not buy anything, but I will tempt you because we've got a lot of really cool stuff from the 70s and 80s and beyond in there, pop culture, sports. It's a fun place to window shop.
Super 70 Sports, our favorite place to go out there on Twitter. Our thanks to our friend Josh Karp for getting us together, and thanks to you, Ricky, for being with us today. I hope you'll come back and visit again sometime.
Hey, Rich, it was my pleasure. Even though you're a friend of Josh Karp, I like you anyway.
Appreciate you for not judging me by the company I keep. Thanks, Ricky.
Thank you, Rich.
Ricky Cobb, Super 70 Sports on Downtown.